to behold the fair beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. So on Ash Wednesday, as we begin Lent, I was really struck this year for a reason I don't quite understand, but what I was struck by was the idea that prayer is not a speech. Prayer is not something you use to lift yourself up. If you want to pray, go into your closet and pray. Because if you pray in public and try to make a speech, that is your reward, what you get from the folks around you. But in our prayer closet, our Father who sees in private will reward us in private. And I really, really want that time for myself. I really want that time to go off and just between me and the Lord. And I'm having trouble doing that. It's my own fault, I'm certain. I don't take the time, although I will say I don't have the time. I mean to take the time and something else comes up, but I'm not getting that time, just me and him. And I struggle with that, and particularly in this last week when I want some time to really think on the scriptures and think what the message is that speaks to me to share with you, and it's just not happening. Yesterday I set aside some time. I thought I was right there. I had this block of time. It's going to be me and you, Lord, in the closet. And then the phone rang, and there was that. But I still want that for a holy Lent. I want that, and I want that so that I can discern what the message is that comes from these readings for us today. What am I to learn from that? And it seems what I'm to learn is about argument and dissatisfaction and questions and faith and a lack of it. That's what is jumping out at me. I mean, we start with Abraham. Abram at that time, the first faithful man. He's out in the valley. He slays all the other kings. He's now going to be the ruler. And to prove that, on his way back into town, he is stopped and greeted by the great priest Melchizedek. And he gets a blessing. He's won the land. He has the blessing of the Lord. And then the Lord comes to him in a vision and says, you will have more than you can imagine. And Abram sort of says, yeah, but what are you going to do for me right now? Because you promised me children, and I'm old, and I don't have any kids yet. Well, way to go, Abram. But he's engaged. He's in a conversation. Maybe it's an argument, but he's engaged. Where is this? And God seems to say, go out and count the stars. Count the stars, and one day your descendants will be greater than the number of stars. Abram, filled with faith, says, how do I know that? Prove it. Now, if you ask God to prove something to you, you got to be careful, because here's what God then asks of Abraham. Go get a heifer and a ram and a goat and a couple birds and cut them in half and just lay them out there, and I'll tell you what's next. Just lay them on top of each other. Sounds like an all-day project. So be careful when you say, I want proof. But he does it. And then sometime over the night, what happens in a symbolic way that people at that time would understand is where those two halves were on top of each other, they were divided, but the smoke and the fire came between them of the Lord. And the symbol, the covenant promise that they understood made that day was, let that not be like us, that we will be divided. Abram is not yet fully a believer, but he's still a righteous man. But I admire and I worry about the fact that he questions God and asks for proof. And I wonder and I worry when I don't do that. we get to this story from Paul to the Philippians, and it's one of the happy epistles. Most of the words in Philippians are joyful, but Paul speaks to a particular issue here, as he says, through his tears. Because as he worked so hard to build up the church of Jesus Christ, the church based on mercy, there is another voice. There is an argument. And it's an argument not unlike we see in a campaign year. It's an argument not unlike we'd see in a world where the Pope is having an argument with a guy running for president. The argument is, you can't really be a Christian unless you do it my way. See, you have to be a Jew first. And you have to follow all the Jewish rules and eat the Jewish food and be circumcised. And Paul's saying, don't listen to them. Their God is their belly. If they want to make the food that important, let God be their belly. We're the people that just accept that Jesus came and emptied himself out for all of us. Even through his tears, he says, please, don't listen to that side of the argument. And then we get to the gospel story. And some of the Pharisees come to talk to Jesus and warn him about Herod Antipas. Now we know the Pharisees are not friendly to Jesus. They'd like him to leave town. So when they give him a warning, you wonder what they're really up to. And when they say, listen, Herod is out to kill you, you ought to leave town, Jesus. Well, when your enemy encourages you to leave town because somebody else is going to kill you, you have to wonder, do you not? Maybe it's real. But Herod is to be feared. It's the Herod that arrested John the Baptist when he got tired of his criticism, that asked for his head, had his head delivered on a silver platter. Another argument, more friction, more stress. Jesus, they say, run away. Herod wants to kill you. And Jesus, in his crude of language as he uses in the Bible for us, is, you tell that fox, I'm right here. I'm here, and I'm casting out demons, and I'm curing people, and I'll be here tomorrow, and the day after that, and on the third day, I'll finish my work. I'll be right here. I wonder how the Pharisees took that news back to Herod. If it was true, they might say, well, we weren't so very successful. If they were making it up, he might say, what are you doing talking to Jesus? I'll be right here, doing what I'm called to do. All these things this week, I'm trying to get time to listen to them and put them together the way the church fathers took so much time to put these readings together for our benefit. And I struggle to find, what do I take away from all of this? Up to and including 6 o'clock this morning, and I'm hiding in a corner of McDonald's having a cup of coffee, thinking and praying on this, just wanting to be left alone. And in comes a fellow I know and decides to join me for coffee. And I said, how are you? Which at first I thought might have been a mistake. But as it turned out, he said, it's really hard sometimes, Dennis. He says, because I'm really trying to stay on the straight and narrow. You know I am. But my friends are saying go out drinking with me, and they want to do this and they want to do that. He said, it's really hard. I said, are you saying that we are called to lead a good life and to work for peace, but we're often distracted by the world? Are you saying that? He said, yeah. I said, thanks. You just finished my sermon for me. We do live in a world filled with stress and tension and argument and discussion. And, you know, when we see these wonderful, beautiful pictures of Jesus with the little lambs and the children, we have this pastoral view of him. Jesus' life was filled with tension, filled with argument, and yet he stood up, just like Paul stood up and said, that's not the way to go. We live in that world. And so more and more, I'm encouraged to get that time in the prayer closet, to find that peace, to be reminded that it's going to be difficult out there in the world, but we don't have a chance if we don't engage with God. And with Abraham, ask for questions, ask for proof. Be willing to walk that road believing that God will answer us if we can hang around long enough to hear the answer. I'll close with this from our psalm. What if I had not believed that I should see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living? O tarry and await the Lord's pleasure. Be strong, and he shall comfort your heart. Here it is. Wait patiently for the Lord. Am I going to call?